Listen, all right. Everything I'm an ideas else. Guy.
I'm an ideas guy.
But I have ideas, Hayden. I have ideas. I just don't want to do anything.
Oh, you want to tell me about them too? You want to be one of those people? Want to be one of those people that spends like half of their f-ing day talking about all of the god f-ing things they want to make, and then you don't.
White people. Just the two whitest motherfuckers you know talking to like various hip hop artists. But we're not talking about like their artistry, their credit. We're just talking about anime.
Talking about anime.
Hell yeah.
Speaking of white and anime, welcome to another exciting episode of the Weeb Crew podcast.
The whitest anime podcast.
I am your host, Mumi. Of the esteemed Weeb Crew.
Right.
Joined with me, as always, except when not, Sai from Psyotic. That's getting censored. And we got... Yeah,
definitely gonna have to bleep that one out.
Hayden, from Hayden the Historian on YouTube.
I'm Caucasian.
Yeah, so today... Today is the most shit-posty fucking episode.
Yeah.
Because I've been fucking busy with work. I haven't felt like doing much.
Yeah, we
kind of
fucked up on the scheduling.
Well, Sai was like with Otakon shit for like a week and a half. I've been fucking slammed with work. So I didn't feel like reaching out to people, like taking notes and shit. So this is like, I don't know. This is like the most like... behind the curtain, I guess, episode.
This is the consequence of like having to like maintain a schedule, whereas like a year ago we just wouldn't upload an episode until we had one ready, but now it's like we want to like stay at least somewhat consistent.
I mean, it's all right because we still got like something to talk about,
right? Yeah,
but like this is like, so this subject, because usually we like come up with a subject for like a guest or something and we're like, oh, this would be interesting to talk to this person about or whatever. This is just like the shit that we talk about on a daily basis.
Yeah, if you're in our Discord server, which by the way is not Patreon exclusive, you will just hear us rant and bitch about this.
Yeah,
more specifically in call.
Yeah, in call. Yeah. Yeah, this is literally just a Discord call.
Yeah, you are
literally that we were recording a Discord call, even though we're all recording our own on our own.
Right.
Own.
Well, that's like the ideal podcast, you know, where it's just, you know, a bunch of friends getting together and just having a conversation.
Yeah, talking about real issues. Like really start a podcast. I think we'll make it far.
Yeah. This would be a great podcast.
it'll make
a really interesting topic for everyone to enjoy and find interesting, and definitely watch up until this point and not just click off in half a second.
I would have totally clicked off. So we're going. Today's topic is we're going to talk about gatekeeping. I think we're going to touch on what is and isn't a hidden gem / underrated anime.
Right.
And we will tie these two together like the video essayists we are.
Well, I mean, realistically, can you gatekeep something if it's not already kind of like unknown, like underrated or like a hidden gem? Like, you can't gatekeep, like, One Piece.
I mean, you can. I don't know how successful you could be at it.
You can make an attempt. You can give it the good old college try and then just fall flat on your face.
Well, you see, there you can make a community, right? Like, let's take, like, a general community, for example. So you can have a community like 4chan's, like, A-Board or something. And they will gatekeep from using the anime subject board. Even though anime itself is not a niche subject that like people have not heard of.
Sure.
So you can gatekeep something that is popular to varying degrees of success, I guess.
We do also just like in our own server, just bully people we don't like until they leave or we ban them.
Oh my God. I can't believe you're saying we're gatekeepers.
Yes.
That's
true. I don't want annoying people in Injustice, our server.
The true anime elitists.
The true anime elitists.
Let me ask you something. How do you define gatekeeping?
It's a good question. Good starting point.
The way I see it is gatekeeping has, there's multiple angles to it. The way I think most people see it is, I really like this underground show called Neon Genesis Evangelion, and I don't like people finding out about it, so I'm going to act like a dick online so that people don't want to watch the show.
And just, you know, constantly talk about how you don't want people to watch Evangelion. You don't want normies
constantly talking about Evangelion.
Only tweet about things where you're like, I don't want normies to find Evangelion.
Exactly.
I feel like that's definitely a facet of gatekeeping. Like, that's definitely, that is gatekeeping. It's just, I don't know if that's the, like, the singular way to define it or anything.
Well, that's where I'm getting at, because the way I kind of see it is, so I'm generally not super for gatekeeping. I don't really give a shit. People can have whatever they want. However, the way I sort of go about it is, so I'm a researcher and I have a little mini library, if you want to call it that, right next to me, full of books on anime, a bunch of research shit. Is it gatekeeping that I'm not scanning all of it and uploading it immediately to Internet Archive? Maybe. You could see it that way. But I would rather present this information in a valuable, meaningful, and entertaining way on YouTube. So, compiling.
Yeah, that also just sounds like work.
Well, yeah. It is, I mean, a lot of work. But,
I mean, I guess that is gatekeeping, because, like, I think we talked about it with some of the gods. People would gatekeep a lot of Taniguchi's, like, work, because they wanted people to actually, like, buy the product. You didn't see scans of, like, some of the gods, and I think a Distant Neighborhood had scans relatively early, but, like, some of his other stuff. Like, I forget the my father, the one with the father, or whatever haircut, I forget the fucking name, but a lot of his stuff didn't have scans until, like, more recently. Kayaki no Ki.
Well, here's the conundrum then, though, is that by gatekeeping, you are then also making it much more likely that this stuff could just become available. Like Hayden, if I were to say, for example, burn down your house, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All that research material would go with it, because you presumably haven't uploaded it anywhere.
I do have it saved. I do have it backed up.
Okay, but I'm destroying your computer as well when I set your house on fire.
Okay.
Which is an actionable threat, by the way.
This is a threat.
I'm going to burn
this is
your
a
house.
Promise.
This is a promise. Well, I promise
I'll be,
you.
I'll be prepared.
I'm going to
it.
Burn your house down with you inside.
Payne says they'll be prepared for it, and they mean, like, they're just prepared to die.
Prepared, I mean, basically.
You're going to show,
like,
up just and lay
24,
in bed.
Like,
but
a little
that is,
over
that
a
is
week
like
ago.
That is, like, a concern, though, where it's like, because who's that one guy we were talking about? Like, I think it was the episode of, like, Overworked Salary Man. He has all these, like, TV rips and of various series that I don't think I've ever really gotten a proper, like, physical release. He has of these things, but hasn't really made them available. And, you know, we can say that's gatekeeping, but by not making it publicly available, you are also making him much more likely that it's just not going to be preserved in any sort of, like, historical record.
Right.
Yeah, but I think the intent is a little bit different. For that guy, I don't think he has any intentions of ever really uploading it, period. For me, right. I see it more as a way of, like, motivating me to actually put that material to use so that it's not just sitting in my house, just wasting a bunch of space, being a brick.
Just rotting, growing mold. Yeah, that's fair.
Growing mushrooms.
Would you plan to, like, would you want to, like, upload it, like, online after you've put out a video on it? Like, video using it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Then, yeah, that is like, it's like a almost like a matter of, like, like,
it's more so, like, withholding information until you use it.
Right. Yeah. You have the inside scoop. The inside scoop being things that have already technically been released. Other people do have those things too. It's just they presumably also have never bothered to put any of that stuff online.
Yeah, and you know, Western YouTubers, everything's on a tight schedule. Got to make videos. Yep. Can't always afford to import a bunch of research material from Japan, and then you know, using it in your videos or anything right, like that, yeah. Because that takes a lot of time and costs a lot of money. But I don't know, I'm already a collector, so this is within my interest, and I like to put it to good use.
Yeah.
It's basically just like a gradient, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have gate, because there's like socially, I guess you would say just socially acceptable gatekeeping, in that like putting a price tag on a video game would be a form of gatekeeping, right? But like no one's going to call it out for being gatekeeping, because it's like you made a product, you have the right to recuperate your cost and make a profit off of this something that you made, right? But it is like a form of gatekeeping, essentially. And then like you have that with like communities, so like us like running people off on the server that we don't think contribute to a conversation well, or right, like mesh with, have a general copacetic relationship with the server or whatever, like that would be a form of gatekeeping.
Yeah.
And it's not just like this server takes a more libertarian approach, I guess you could say.
don't say that. You're gonna make it sound like you're just allowed to come in here and like start posting child.
No.
Here are like 3D printing gun schematics.
More of a democrat. I don't know. Like it is very mob hard to get banned.
Is how mob this server is yeah. run.
It is pure democracy.
Yeah, with a kind of reluctant person at the top to keep things somewhat in check. But what I wonder, but there's also things like, we wouldn't say that like, and if anyone listening to this is like, you know, has like a degree or is like done any amount of like work when it comes to like library or like information sciences, is that...
I know I haven't.
You know, you go to like various archives and they are going to have things that are privileged and access, because like, you know, you're not going to be able to just access like some like book, a text that is like 1,000 years old. You're not just going to be able to like walk in and be like, show me that. And when they tell you, no, why do you need this in the first place? That's not really gatekeeping either, I don't think.
Personally, I advocate for the Vatican to open their vaults. Let us see what's inside. I want to see the aliens.
What fucking Dan Brown novels have you been reading?
This isn't the conspiracy theory episode.
But of course, when people say like gatekeeping, like colloquially, people get mad on Twitter about stuff. And like, this is why we need gatekeeping. It's like, what do you mean by that? Do you just mean you don't want to have like, I don't want women or people of color in my hot, like enjoying the same things that I do?
Right.
I mean, I don't for the record, but that I wouldn't call that gatekeeping. I would just say I'm a racist.
Right.
Yeah. Misogynist.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I think the worst kind of gatekeeping is always like being very possessive of something that you never created.
Yeah, it's weird though. Like, I can understand it to a point of like taking ownership in a way where it's like, oh, I found this thing and like I'm introducing it to people. And so you take like a, you can take like a sort of like enjoyment or like pride in like seeing more people enjoy this thing that you introduce them to. And like, depending on the scale of which, like how many people have seen said thing, you can feel more or less directly responsible. Like if you recommend like Evangelion to somebody, you're not going to feel like, oh, I found Evangelion and I've recommended it to one person. And so I've one more person has seen Evangelion out of the millions and millions. But like something that's like kind of more obscure, like you've only had like 500 views on YouTube. Right. And you recommend it to somebody and then you see like 250 people watch it. It's like, it feels more directly actionable, where it's like, oh, I had an actual impact on this thing spreading to other people.
Us telling everyone to go watch A Japanese Boy Who Draws, which is on YouTube, by the way. You can watch it officially and subbed.
We are the biggest Japanese Boy Who Draws stands on YouTube.
We continually kill that short film. When you talk about things that, like, I don't think it's necessarily just things that you yourself, I mean, I think you can also just gatekeep certain facets of, like, your own culture. I was watching FD Signifier's video talking about, like, the Kendrick Lamar Drake beef, and talks about, like, this the way he portrays them is like this like shadowy group, like fucking Sele from Evangelion, of like what he calls like the gatekeepers, who are people who are basically the ones who are able to determine who is able to be popular when it comes to like hip hop and hip hop culture.
But who gatekeeps the gatekeepers?
So you have things like that as well, where it's like, I do think gatekeeping has a place in terms of making sure that, you know, when you're broadcasting like your own cultural products out to the rest of the world, to ensure that they're not then just going to be misappropriated by assholes who have, like, you know, no connection to that culture, no connection to that origin, completely misunderstand it, and then just transform it into something completely different and kind of repugnant as a result.
Yeah, a lot of gatekeeping is like basically just narrative control, right?
Right,
like it's like controlling the spread of the information to where it will not, because like you could like release something hype in a hypothetical, I don't have a direct example, but like a hypothetical scenario, you could potentially release something and it gets spread around. Maybe like Shoujo Tsubaki is a good example of this, where it's like the official release is not nearly as like widespread as like the TikTok sort of like the videos going viral talking about it. And so that'd be an example of like how the gatekeeping of the publisher and like actually giving the work in an official capacity in like a appropriate kind of way, where it's like, oh no, children can't buy this, or they can if their parents buy it, whatever, but it's not intended for children. And it's like, God has that kind of specific context.
Absolutely not for children.
Absolutely not for children. it has that context to it. People that are interested in watching it for whatever reason, like artistically or psychologically, whatever the fuck, will then spend money on it. And there's like that gatekeeping element to it, as opposed to just being like exposed to something out of context and then just being like, oh my God, this is terrible. And like, sure, not having
that's the thing where it's like a bunch of people talk about something like Shoujo Tsubaki and they're like, it's the most banned anime ever.
Most fucked up.
It's
anime.
Illegal. It's illegal to watch. I don't know why I'm turning into fucking Richard Nixon. it's illegal to watch. And basically, I mean, the problem there is like just basically spreading misinformation as well, which is like, you know, again, there probably is like an argument in terms of gatekeeping and ensuring that the people who are like the most prominent voices in talking about a thing are also people who know what the fuck they're talking about, as opposed to just playing into fucking sensationalism for clicks.
I guess there's like a balance, though, because it's like, at what point do you want that versus just having anybody with any kind of a perspective and experience being able to talk about it, right?
I think there needs to be some sort of foundation there.
I think it kind of goes into what I was talking about with like my research material and making that available whenever I release something, is to kind of be the change that you want to see. So in the case of like Shoujo Tsubaki, every single video on it is absolutely putrid, like like God, embarrassing.
Even the ones that seems kind of well researched, like they're actually going to like talk about Hiroshi Harada and like
it never goes the full way. It's never what you want it to be.
There's a video I believe on Death Lullaby that I think actually gets more into like the like radical politics of like Harada himself.
Yeah, I've seen.
Well, there's a video by Aaron Dillon Kearns a friend of mine on Limitless Paradise, which is incredible. That actually goes into Hiroshi Harada's politics and upbringing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about, is everybody else sucks complete fucking dick, making videos on shit that they have no experience in, no like valuable thoughts or anything. And then you see that and you're knowledgeable and you're well read into this topic, so make something. A lot of gatekeeping, you know, I don't think Shoji Tsubaki shouldn't be like kept from the public or anything like
right,
that.
Right.
It was gonna reach the public eventually anyway, because people love the sensationalist media.
Sure, but we need to have more educated conversations about it that go beyond just talking about what a shocking movie it is.
Yeah.
But
that can be said for a lot of things.
Do you achieve that through gatekeeping? Or, because like, when we talk
about... Well, no, you introduce a new perspective by introducing your perspective. So
right.
You make a video or a blog, preferably a video, because that actually has the ability to spread around a lot more. People aren't going to read your shitty blog.
Yeah.
Yeah, so get into video editing, making whatever, get somebody to edit for you. I don't care. Just make stuff on things that you are very knowledgeable on, and get off of Twitter. Stop complaining there and actually put your money where your mouth is.
You be the change that you want to see.
In a similar vein, I was actually thinking about like the short that we did of the episode we did with Kenny Lauderdale, where we're talking about Saki Sanabashi, and how it's, anyone who has any reasonable familiarity with like lost media when it comes to anime can immediately tell that Saki Sanabashi is something that never, it's completely fake.
Right.
Never happened. We have a short talking about that. And it's interesting, because if you look at the like the graph for like the views that the short gets, anytime there's another short that goes up that pops off talking about Saki Sanabashi, ours always kind of also starts trending up too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just imagining, you know, that means people are watching that first short about Saki Sanabashi that blew up, and then seeing ours as well, where some, you know, that the first short that blew up is probably talking about like, there's this anime that is completely lost and is really fucked up and can only be found on the dark web. And then it's us, and then you just jump cut to us being like, yeah, if you fucking believe that, you're a goddamn idiot.
Yeah,
what the fuck is wrong with you?
Our short never blew up to the point that all these like other Saki Sanabashi shorts do.
No.
But it's still putting a horse in the race, and that's, at the end of the day, that's what matters. The more people we have in this providing insightful information and actually has some consistency around it, I support it.
Yeah, that's like the thing, I guess, is like a lot of content creation on YouTube is basically like a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Content creators have like a slightly louder voice in the conversation, because they're kind of the linchpin in which the conversation is, like, the forum of the conversation being had.
Yeah,
but
they
like
they are like the you know the trendsetters, like the tastemakers, the people who, you know, a lot of, you know, that's the classic thing. It's like, did you get that opinion from a YouTuber? Did a YouTuber give you that opinion?
They're the puppet masters.
I would say like forum moderators or something like. but like, if you don't want misinformation to be spread, you kind of have to like help mitigate that by like making the correct information louder. And so the only way you can do that is by like adding voices to drown out the copious amounts of misinformation or whatever.
You need to start spamming the shitty threads on A so that they hit like the reply limit and then are just completely fucking like,
don't.
And then they just go out the door.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't go on
it. Just ignore.
We need more people. Like, we wouldn't have so many videos that keep saying, talking about fucking Saki Sanabashi, the lost anime, if, like, there were more videos that were coming out that are just like, this is fucking horseshit. There's apps like, could it exist? Sure. Is it probable? Absolutely fucking not.
Right. Like, well, it's like Kenny talking about his DMs getting blown up whenever Wang would make a video on it. Cause like Wang wouldn't outright say it exists, but it would kind of try to cover the conversation that was happening around it at the time in an objective manner. The problem with that is that the conversation that was happening around it was also just fucking stupid.
Yeah. But of course that was what was getting clicks and that was what was getting views. And so you can't really fault the content creator for following where their livelihood is. But at the same time, it's at least he wasn't saying that it existed.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, the unfortunate thing is that
maybe he does. If he does, always, I'll put a clip in here.
It's always going to be easier to make something when you don't have any actual thoughts or information on your topic, just blindly reacting to it or regurgitating what you've heard of it.
That's the YouTube meta, isn't it? All right. I'm going to grow my hair out long. I'm going to put on a white t-shirt and then I'm going to talk into the mic and say poopy butt farts about things happening today.
Saki Sotobashi is the greatest anime I've seen since I spread my asshole and saw the birth of the universe inside of my colon.
I feel like you're describing somebody.
No, I just made that up on the spot.
Characters reflecting or seeming like other people is totally coincidence.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you're listening to this, don't sue us.
Satire and ironic, and you don't, and any actionable threats we make to anyone on this show,
look, we're a podcast, right? We're just Law and Order SVU, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, all right, you definitely listen when we say that you should definitely start injecting yourself with bleach.
Okay,
and
we're not saying anything. We're not even going there. But yeah, I don't know. Would you say that there was a time and place? When we're saying it's gatekeeping is a gradient. Would you say there's a time and place for more gatekeeping in certain situations and less gatekeeping in others? Or do you think that there should just not be gatekeeping altogether?
I don't think there really should be gatekeeping. I think you should just make more effort to spread awareness of whatever you think is important and spread the right information. So, because nobody wins, I think, if we withhold everything and that never comes out again. That one guy who has every anime on VHS, what are we accomplishing with that? You have a valuable information or a valuable collection. Cool. Whatever. Are you going to sell it? No. Okay, cool. You have a bunch of bricks in your basement.
If you have the ability to actually be spreading correct information, and seemingly you are in a unique position to do that. That's the case often for Steve as well. And you just actively choose not to do that. Then you're basically just, leaving a void open for misinformation to just come in and fill the space anyway.
So to clarify, y'all are saying we don't need gatekeeping.
Is more people doing streams, reacting to videos that say things they don't like and spending 8 hours talking about how much we don't like that video.
Right.
That's what we need.
That's absolutely what we need.
We've definitely never done that, though.
We would never do something like that.
But are we saying that, for when we talk about gatekeeping, are we including the gatekeeping of I don't know if you would really it's a form of gatekeeping, but keeping children away from things that aren't necessarily appropriate for their age. I guess that's still a form of gatekeeping. I don't know if you would necessarily define that as that, but are we including shit like that? Or are we just saying,
I think that's just parenting.
Yeah. That's the responsibility of parents to make sure that your kid is not watching stuff, telling them that black people need to be.
What? Why are we hung up on this today? What?
I don't know, but I'm.
Is it because you watched Storage Wars before this? Is that what the problem is?
We were watching Storage Wars. I was also watching InfoWars.
I mean.
Oh no.
That just means you're watching Storage Wars. Like, I'm pretty sure they just have that Alex in the
Jones. I need Alex Jones to be a character on Storage Wars.
You might come out about, you might fat check me, but I'm pretty sure in like every episode you look at, there's like a TV somewhere and it's always got Alex Jones on it.
Always got Alex
Jones. I'm 100% certain that is completely factually correct. I'll be validated.
Well, I'll clarify myself. I think information and correct information, that's what should be spread and like not gatekept. When it comes to like keeping children away from like inappropriate materials, if you want to call that gatekeeping, then sure. Shouldn't happen.
It's like, I don't know.
I think that's reasonable, though.
That's not our responsibility. As people who do not have kids, that is also not our responsibility. That is the responsibility of those kids' parents.
Yes, but it doesn't mean that, you know, we can't not do anything about it either. Because if we see a child around that's watching stuff that they shouldn't be watching, you know, you could do nothing, but you also could do something.
Yes, I feel like the parent would
probably appreciate if you.
I mean, I've talked about the story about how like I saw like Berserk at like a local library next to a bunch of kids who were like on like the like computers playing Fortnite. I just left it there because I thought it'd be funny.
I mean, I don't know. This sounds like the kind of justification. It's like, I'm not your parent. I can post porn in general for you. Maybe we just need to not check your DMs.
Yeah. Or expressly telling you, hey, can you keep a secret from your parents?
It's not my job. You go with my pornography.
I think you can have your own opinions about stuff like that. But I think what's pretty undeniable is the parents should not be allowing their kids to go on gore sites and, you know, get groomed on kick.
Yeah, again, do more to like monitor your kid's access, like what your kid is doing online.
So are we pro or anti gatekeeping?
It's in terms of just being of like, oh, there's this anime, there's this OVA that no one really knows about, and I want more people to know about it. Yeah, I'm anti gatekeeping when it comes to that. I'm not going to like covet some like obscure like anime that has like 1,000 members on my anime list.
Right.
I think it's really good. I want more people to see it overall.
Right. So specifically with anime.
Right. I guess the conundrum is I want people who will appreciate it to watch it. But that's something you have less control over, obviously.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the thing, right? Like, to get the people who will appreciate to watch it, you kind of just have to generate more buzz around it. Because it's kind of like a YouTube video where it's like, to get it in front of the right audience, it just has to be put in front of a larger audience. And it will eventually find like the 2% of the audience that are the quote unquote right audience or whatever.
Right. I mean, to a certain extent, things do still spread through word of mouth, but it's also that's much less of a factor nowadays as well.
Yeah. I mean, well, that is word of mouth.
What do you mean?
Like talking about it. You have to have more people talk about it.
No. More people watching something in an algorithm than picking it up and showing it.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about the algorithm. Okay. The YouTube algorithm is separate from. I'm saying like you kind of have to have more people watching it in general for more people to hear about it to even know it exists to want to watch it.
Like sure, in but general. Again, that's like at least on YouTube, that's like an algorithm.
Well, I'm not even talking about on YouTube. I'm talking about just in general.
This in general, okay.
Yeah, so like if you've never heard of a Japanese boy who draws, how would you find it? Outside of like someone then talking about it on here,
someone
like,
else hey, telling me it. That. It, yeah, I found out about it because someone else told me it exists.
Yeah, and you're more likely to do that if more people have seen it. So like, there's just like kind of like a threshold where it's like you just have to have more people watch it to reach certain people.
Yeah, or you know, we just do randomizer stuff where, you know, now we, What was the show that we watched with Lex? That like a cartoon character, comic book, Fate comic book. Hero Super Inside.
Hero Inside, yes.
Monsters Inside Me, Hero Inside, something like that. Where it's like we didn't hear about it through word of mouth. I don't think anyone ever heard about it through word of mouth because we looked it up and no one was really talking. I think that video with Lex was literally the first video on YouTube talking about it, at least in English.
It hadn't aired in the U.S. yet. Like it had just like aired, I think, in Korea or something. Like I think it was made in
just
Korea.
Happened to have an English dub,
right?
We were just ahead of the curb.
We were the trendsetters.
Trendsetters, guys.
We're not.
Which is what
chasers.
Everyone should strive to be. Be a trendsetter. Be a leader, not a follower.
I don't know. I guess have y'all like ever partaken in any kind of gatekeeping? Like, is it like a community?
My name in the server, Moomy, is literally the Tin Man of being annoying.
That's not exclusive. Not mutually exclusive from gatekeeping, but it's also not.
Well, yeah.
Doesn't necessarily imply gatekeeping.
I guess not.
It just implies you're annoying.
Annoying for the expressive purpose of I want people to leave if I don't like them.
But I want.
So again, stuff like that where it's like, yeah. There. It's like, you know, this is a space. The server is a space that we can actually exercise some degree of like direct control over. As far as like media goes, not really. Usually whenever I come across something that is like, you know, fairly unknown, I'm pretty probably, I think, annoyingly vocal about wanting more people to watch it.
I guess it's weird. I guess it's like I guess people gatekeeping like an anime is kind of an extension of like communal gatekeeping. Because like, if you think about it, like you would gatekeep a community to prevent people that you don't want to talk to or you think would like lower the level of discourse.
Sure. At a certain point, an anime is going to reach a level of popularity where it becomes, it's no longer within the ability of any one person or even a group of people to actually control who is like watching and talking about that anime.
Right.
I think that's the case for most.
There's like this weird niche of anime that are like popular in like a certain type of underground, like,
yeah,
Mickey Momo, Bridge Over Your Dreams, Chibi Marco Chan, My Favorite Song, stuff that is quote unquote like obscure, kind of, mm-hmm. sort of a little bit in the grand scheme of things. Where, like, are you really gatekeeping that because it's like so known within these circles?
Yeah, well, something like, it was an interesting case with when Godzilla,
it's like a cult
minus
classic.
When Godzilla Minus One came out last year, there was like a lot of people talking about, like, you know, people who are just generally annoying assholes also really like the movie because it is just a generally pretty good movie. But there was like I saw a lot of people talking like the tokusatsu community and like the kaiju fandom about, you know, these are the kinds of people who are talking about how Godzilla Minus One owns woke Hollywood need to be like gatekept, you know, away from the shit that they like. When
for
in actuality, I think that the people who are saying Godzilla Minus One owns the libs don't give a fuck about kaiju movies or tokusatsu or like really in general Japanese media beyond just using it as like a talking like a vague talking point.
I mean, you see that with like what they say. Like, there was that one video essay that was making the rounds on Twitter, like with the clip where he's like, "Yeah, Godzilla started out really serious, and then it turned into silly kaiju battles, and was never serious again until Godzilla Minus One." And it's just like, dog, have you never watched a Godzilla movie? Like, what the fuck?
And at a certain, you know, at a certain point, there are just going to be people who have takes like it is going to be inevitable. So it's important to therefore clown on them whenever they say shit like that, or, you know, at least, you know, offer some degree of like constructive criticism, being like, dog, what are you talking about? It is like a thing that I think people who are fans of Godzilla, people who are fans of kaiju movies, tokusatsu, that is something those people should be doing, is that when they do see misinformation, when they see obnoxious people having takes like that, there should still nonetheless be like an act of sort of like defiance, contention, disagreement had with those people who are saying those things.
Yeah, the thing about social media is that everything is like built upon capitalism, and what these people are doing is like kind of playing into that. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people are intentionally ignorant, just to like get people riled up, and
on YouTube, I'll put up thumbnails. These are this kind of stuff.
Yeah, like typically very like far right leaning people who don't give a shit about anything and just want another.
Right. Again, it's like, I mean, it's exactly what they complain about, where it's like they're coming into a fandom and then completely polluting it with their politics.
Whatever I was saying. So instead of like making a 10-hour long video on why this person is a piece of shit, like maybe you could make your own piece. And like maybe that'll take off, and if it doesn't, then maybe somebody else's will. Just keep encouraging people to do good shit, and people who do bad shit, it's very tempting to talk about it, especially with the whole like capitalism edge. You talking about a controversial topic gets more traffic to your thing.
I think it can be like a carrot and stick thing, where if you do only one or the other, I think being able to do both with like some sort of balance between the two is important, where it's like, you can talk you can try and put as much good information out there as you want, but if you're not also taking some of your time to also then directly dispel misinformation, then you are still going to let that misinformation possibly continue to grow.
Yeah, but also like steadily build up your own catalog so you have something to show for yourself.
Right. Yeah. If you all you are only ever doing is just debunking. A good channel that I've been watching recently is the Mini Minuteman, which is like an archaeology channel, and he has this actually like rant at the start of the last video where he's talking about Ancient Apocalypse, which is this shitty Netflix show, pseudo archaeological bullshit, where he has this kind of like rant, basically kind of venting, talking about like, He wants to do more than just these like kind of like, oh, debunking kind of thing. He wants to actively be like an educator beyond just having to like, dispel these like stupid fucking myths and stuff like that. It's unfortunate that, such interesting topics like archaeology, early human history, things like that only seem to ever get traction on YouTube when there is some sort of controversy, when someone is getting pwned or whatever,
That is what people are interested in, sadly.
I really resonate with what he talked about there, because I think it actually kind of applies quite a bit to this conversation we're having here.
Well, you see that in like every facet. It's not just like archaeology or anything like.
Oh, yeah.
You will get more views by talking about like Giguk and the anime, man, we're wrong about this anime, than you would being like underappreciated classic anime or whatever the fuck. Like, if you have something that sounds positive, it's less likely to get clicks because it's not sensationalist enough.
Yeah, because people have been conditioned by the, like, I've seen people say this, like, oh, this is just human nature. People just, are more gravitate, more to negativity. And I don't think that's the case. I think that's something that the internet has specifically condition, and not necessarily even just the internet. I think it's also just the result of like ever since we can go back to like the real start of like the 24-hour news cycle back in like the 80s and 90s, there's this really like kind of like this sort of like outrage become really like a clear like political tool.
Well, that's why you had like countries like the UK ban being able to show like sirens and stuff on TV, because people, they would like use that for like sensationalist kind of like attention grabbing thing. Like, oh, some like tragic happened, or like, oh, some like whatever, like we're going to talk about like a stabbing or something. So they actually banned that there, but you'll still see it like in like the West, like they'll like,
oh yeah, yeah,
or not the West. You'll still see it in America.
Like I'm imagining like I'm fairly certain I've watched like Tucker Carlson and seen like fucking like flashing lights and sirens and alarms going. I mean, it's off not even
like it's not just like Tucker Carlson or like it's not like a it's a bi
yeah.
Bipartisan thing. Like you'll see it in like CNN.
I mean, beyond even just being a bipartisan thing, John Stewart is one of the most influential public speakers, like newsmen, whatever the fuck you want to call him, mm-hmm. of the past however many years. And he got that because he was doing direct like reactions basically to shitty news stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's what gets the attention, really. You know,
I think people just like gossip because it's something to spice up your boring everyday life.
Right, and it's a middle ground between small talk about the weather and then just I don't know, we're going to talk about politics.
There's an element.
You know, we're gonna have like a serious kind of like thinking discussion.
There's an element of like catharsis, I guess, where it's like, oh. We're talking about how this person wasn't as good of a person as we were.
I mean, sure, I mean we're doing that. I mean, that's literally what we're doing right now. This entire episode has been us basically just either alluding to or directly talking about other things or phenomenon that we have problems with. This is another episode where we just complain.
We are complainers.
Isn't that every episode?
A little bit.
Yeah.
This episode's great. I love this episode. It's going fantastic.
I don't know. The Patrick Galbraith episode was pretty positive.
We complained a little bit. Talked about the cyclical nature of stuff. Go check out an episode. Great episode.
Yeah, it's a good episode. I mean, that episode's done a lot better than the other ones recently, but yeah.
Yeah. Since you kind of touched on it earlier when you were saying like someone was a hidden gem, how do we define what is like underrated or a hidden gem or obscure?
I think it depends.
I think it's a goalpost that's always moving. So yeah. You see these like really obnoxious threads on Twitter that are like, man, friggin' Noragami is so underrated.
Or like, he's a hidden gem.
What are your favorite underrated anime? I like, friggin' Delusion.
To a certain extent, I understand where something like, you know, when talking about like, oh, you know, people have forgotten about Noragami, because I do think that is kind of the case where you look at like the My Anime List stats for Noragami, and there's over 2 million members for that show on My Anime List. Yeah. Meanwhile, something like Evangelion has, I think, like at time of recording, like 1.8 million. But I would say that, you know, in terms of the public consciousness, in terms of what people are talking about and overall relevancy when it comes to anime nowadays, Evangelion is way more relevant than Noragami, Noragami. And I think this is in part due to the fact that Noragami had 2 seasons and then it just ended. And, you know, it didn't really have any sort of like staying power after that. It didn't have any successive seasons. And then wasn't really a show like Evangelion. People were continuing to talk about it after the fact. It leaves a lot on the table to discuss. But it was nonetheless very popular in the moment. It's like, you know, it's like a light that burns twice as bright dies out twice as quick.
Yeah, but then it kind of,
I don't even
again
know.
Like the goalpost is always moving. So let's say like Noragami is underrated because I'm at my school. I've only seen Noragami and everybody else has seen Jujutsu Kaisen and My Hero Academia and they don't understand me. Online, Noragami has always been incredibly popular with women, especially. Mm-hmm. So you will not have any difficulties finding people to talk about Noragami with online. And then we get to like our level, which is like the bottom of the iceberg. We're like, yeah, fucking Matt Tierica, of course everybody knows what that is because we know what it is and we talk to each other a lot.
I think there's a thing where it's like there's a difference between people not talking about something and people not knowing that about something where right. You know, if we were put up a tweet or something talking, you know, that basically would just say Does anyone here remember Noragami? We would probably get a lot of people saying they fucking remember Noragami. It's just that not a lot of people are talking about it because there are other things that are, you know, to talk about. You know,
it's very neurotic. And
a lot of anime have come out in the 10 years since Noragami.
Yeah. Well, it's also notable to talk about the fact that there's like a sample size kind of problem. Where
that's true. Yeah.
We're on MyAnime. The stats we have to go by is like MyAnime list. Miami list has only existed for like what, maybe close to 20 years now.
I think 2004. This might be its 20th anniversary.
So it wasn't around when Evangelion aired. It went around when Evangelion aired in the U.S. I'm pretty sure. If it was, it definitely wasn't like as popular.
It would
as
have
it
been
in
its
website.
Nascency. I think. What was big at in 2004? Obviously, I think Full Metal Alchemist 03 was at the top, and then probably things like Azumanga Daioh, Monster I think was up there as well. You know, things from the early 2000s were on like the top of the chart from of my anime list at the time.
So then you
highest rated.
So then you can look at like broadcast numbers, I guess, and look at like the key demo or whatever of like who was watching, how many people were watching Evangelion in 1995 and like, or in the US in 2004, whatever fucking aired.
2003, yeah.
Or you could look at fucking like the Blu-ray sales, how many Blu-rays did Noragami sell versus Evangelion, or like the average per volume. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you could have like go about your sample size, like trying to determine like how popular a show is. They give you radically different results. It's not necessarily like, it just really depends. Like Noragami was a very popular show for like Western anime fans. Evangelion was also popular, but it also was like popular earlier, and when it had a resurgence, it was already like a retro show. It would be harder for people to get into than like a Noragami being a new anime.
People are always going to get into anime as well. People being like, man, why does nobody talk about Haruhi now? You know, people back then who got into anime through Haruhi and Azumanga Daioh, they wanted to watch modern anime, especially digital anime, because cell animation in standard definition back then kind of looked like shit.
Yeah.
And like, it's still the same case now. You know, you watch Jujutsu Kaisen, you want to watch more new shows that kind of look like it. I mean, Haruhi still looks great, but it's not quite in the same like public consciousness, because we only have so much time. We can't expect everybody to have seen all of the classics, keep up with all of the new shows, because that's just unrealistic for anybody's schedule.
Right. Yeah, it's hard, because like I was going through when I was thinking about this, I'm like, how would you determine what is like, what are these things, right? And so I'm looking through like mainly kind of recent like TV series, like within like the last 5 years or so. And you have like Bokusuma, which is airing this season, only has like 37,000 people. And it's like, that seems like a pretty low amount. But then you look at like something like Hugo Precure, I think that's got like 19 or 17,000 people. It's like, that's really low. But is Hugo, would you say Hugo Precure was like obscure or like unpopular? Like by the metrics of like my anime list, I guess you could say that in the sense of like
a little known anime by Sazae-san.
Sazae-san.
Yeah, I mean, my anime list is not a very good metric because it's always going to bias like popular classic shows and currently airing stuff. Because
and just as like a sample base for the users, people who are like tracking what they watch on my anime list, you are already going to be skewing to a certain kind of anime fan. Whereas
you're
like,
going to be skewing very autistic. So the reason why Sailor Moon is not in the top 10 and only has like what maybe 500,000 people, I don't actually know. It's because women don't give a shit about that, or at least like regular girls who grew up in the 90s and saw the Deke dub of the Sailor Moon, they don't know what that is. They don't give a shit. They're watching Jujutsu Kaisen if they're still into anime or, you know,
or like my example is always like Maid-sama, because Maid-sama has remained very popular for quite a number of years, specifically because it was on Netflix. It's been on Netflix for the longest time. And, you know, if you were watching anime on Netflix, invariably Netflix's algorithm would then recommend you watch Maid-sama. And as a result, a lot of people have just ended up watching Maid-sama. And even though it's not necessarily like something I see a lot of people talking about, it's something that people are still very much aware of because it's been so accessible for so long.
Yeah. And it's like the same thing with the rest of the Netflix stuff where a lot of it, like Be the Beginning, probably doesn't have that many people on my anime list. But if you look at, let's say, YouTube views, I'm sure the YouTube views are a lot more telling of how actually popular it is, or like Akuma-kun on Netflix or whatever else.
Yeah, I guess it basically boils down to all this is like a matter of perception. It's like, this just feels like it's underrated, or it feels like it's obscure, because
it's going to depend on the community. It's going to depend on the space that you're talking in as well. Where if you come in here and you know, Symphogear is not an underrated anime. It's not a hidden gem in our server. No. But I think for like a lot of like, you know, more casual fans and a lot more casual spaces, you bring up Symphogear and they may have heard of it.
It might be the show.
There will be if I were to go into like a really norm, like the anime trend server, and I ask about Symphogear, there are probably going to be people, by and large, I don't think people are going to know about it, but there's going to be a handful of people who do know about it, and then they're just going to get really, really excited because that's what Symphogear fans are like.
Yeah.
Yo, no one's seen that show. It's crazy.
It's like they found like a new friend.
Yeah, so really, I think it just depends on like your sort of sphere. And a lot of people are really bad at finding friend groups. So you'll have these people who are like, man, why does nobody know about Princess Tutu and like Magical Doremi? And I'm like, bro, have you looked for 2 seconds? But then like, I don't know, I'm not in their position. For me, it's hard to find people who are into Bleach and Demon Slayer. Are any of us watching the new Demon Slayer? No. Are any of us watching Slime or Fairy Tail? No. We're watching Egumi Legacy.
There was actually, I didn't go to this panel, but there was actually a panel at Otakon called How to Find Your People on the Internet. And it's, talks about creating your own special community online while you stream and finding... creating your own special community online while you stream and finding your people that help you belong, which I guess is something that people need to be like taught how to. For me, it is like, I don't know, I guess I've been on the internet for so long, it's just something that kind of comes naturally after a certain point. I don't know, for me it's just been a matter of like, oh, I just find people I like to be around or just hang around.
I think it's also just growing up and discovering yourself and what you value.
Yeah.
I mean, logistically, I don't think it's really that different from like finding your like a friend group IRL. It's just a different kind of space.
Yeah, I guess I'm in a unique position there since I am a Discord moderator, a server owner.
Oh, you're a pedophile.
No. I'm not being the alligator, but no. No.
Leave that long pause in there.
Cut that. Don't actually cut it.
Because, like, I've not had to really find a community. I just had to make one.
Yeah, we've done a bit of a different skill set over the past, like, 6 years or however long the server's been around to, like, build up and cultivate a community that we like.
Yeah, people kind of will underestimate how difficult it could be to, like, get a server off the ground and like a consistent capacity. Cause like you can make a server, you can get a bunch of people in it That doesn't necessarily mean...
no one's talking in there. Like, there are so many like large YouTubers. YouTubers who are exponentially larger than us. You go into their Discord server, and it's crickets.
Yeah.
Because they've not really done anything to actually, like, cultivate that space.
They were basically there to try to talk to them, them being the YouTuber or whatever. And right.
And then they're not active. And there's, like... And then nothing happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it depends on, like, what kind of videos you make as well. If you're, I mean, we both have servers, and mine is also decently active because it's a space that I've fostered, and I'm very vocal about my opinions, and maybe I can be a little bit obnoxious sometimes, I'll admit. But it's, like, people, I feel like people know what kind of person I am and what I stand for. And if that is something that you relate to or like you find interesting, then you'll want to be more involved with that. Whereas if you have no opinions on anything and you play everything super safe, then yeah, you'll have your little, like Care Bears corner where
what Hayden is trying to say is that if you are a racist, you should join their server. You go pay money to their Patreon and join their server.
Absolutely. Don't actually.
Don't do that.
Give me money, but get the fuck out of my face.
You will not be allowed in the server if you start spewing nonsense.
Hayden will ban you and keep your money.
I will keep your money and I won't feel bad about it.
But yeah, I feel like part of it's that people kind of, I don't know if a lot of people don't necessarily have like substantive conversations. Like it could be hard to
which is weird because then a lot of people also want to have podcasts.
Well, they that's because of the dynamic. That has nothing to do with like the substance of the conversation. They're just like, oh, dude, we talked about this somewhat interesting thing for like 10 minutes and we had like a good banter going. We should have a podcast. It's like,
yeah, it's such a deep conversation today, bro.
I already made that joke.
Well, that's not a joke. Now we're just calling them out directly.
Now we're just relaying things that we've had people actually say. We've seen people actually say in real life.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Keep shitting on him.
Do I need to start reading posts off the R podcasting subreddit?
You know, I actually get fucking because I will go and look and see if people are like wanting to collab or something and like just see whatever opportunities there are, because you gotta keep your hands in some pots and some cookie jars or whatever. Got to spin a lot of plates. And I'll get recommended like, I'm thinking about starting a podcast about video games or something. It's like, oh my God.
And I'm like, oh no.
I've been playing games since I was like 8 years old. I think I have a lot of things to say. It's like, maybe you do. You probably don't.
Probably don't.
Unless you've done that. Like certain type of person where you're like, oh no. Oh, they want to be a writer and a musician, and they want to do podcasts and videos. And
listen, all right, I'm an ideas guy.
Yeah. Don't be that guy. Be a do it kind of person. Don't just talk.
No, that's the problem.
I have ideas, Hayden. I have idea. I just don't want to do anything.
Oh, you want to tell me about them too? You want to be one of those people? Want to be one of those people that spends like half of their fucking day talking about all of the goddamn things they want to make, and then you don't make any of it?
Hayden, this is getting kind of pert. Are you talking about someone specifically?
I'm talking about a couple people.
Oh no,
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I won't name any names because I don't want to get sued. Fuck you.
Join our Patreon to get the names.
Yeah, the names.
Exactly.
The names are but yeah. It is frustrating because I do want to find like things that aren't talked about. Mm-hmm. But it's like, how? how does one find things that aren't found yet? It really, what boils down to, in like a Western perspective, you just don't. Like, I'm not, right. I'm not, well, I can't well, go to well, like
most
a,
again, most people just rely on out, like, people are not actively seeking things out by and large. They just wait for an algorithm to put it in front of them.
Right.
Well, the thing about algorithms is that you can actually use it to your advantage now. So you were mentioning like anime randomizers. You can use the tools that you have to find some stuff that nobody's talking about.
But I'm talking like...
Or you
like,
can
I don't
like actually
do that.
Buy
I don't,
stuff.
I just want to... I want to open up Hulu or Netflix and I want to just have a show and click on. And then I want to get hammered and fall asleep drunk in my comfy chair every night.
I mean, like, I'm oh, speaking
as I,
like...
As I overdose on Vicodin and Xanax.
This is also getting very specific. Are you talking about somebody?
Talking about myself.
Oh,
how's should, that going for you?
You should just take like not well. 4,000 milligrams of
yeah. I'm like
Benadryl.
I'm like I think I have like a serious problem with like depression.
But I know when I'm speaking about you just can't do it in a Western sense. You can't find like anime that has just not been found. Like it's just not,
oh yeah,
it's right actively impossible. Like, I'm not going to be able to go into some random person's garage sale in their attic and find fucking The Wandering Samurai short from 1917. Like, that's...
Yeah.
You're not doing that on fucking Yahoo Auctions
Japan.
The closest
you'll get is you'll look for, like, indie anime on YouTube and find, like, YouTube videos that have, like, 20 views. Or something like what happened to Gil and I in New York City, where we just went into a random video store and ended up finding, like, a bunch of, like, rare bootleg anime.
I mean, you can do, like, what Kenny did and, like, buy a fucking vinyl and then realize it was supposed to be an anime. That would be closer,
right?
But again, that's still and contingent on somebody already having known about the thing, listing it up on a website,
right,
and just making it accessible to you. But insofar as like what you can do in a Western sense, right? Like being able to like find things that aren't talked about. It's, I don't know, it's kind of, I guess, like, if I just start looking for, like, obscure anime in Japanese or something, like, maybe I could find something that's, like, it, I don't know, it's not necessarily, like, because, like...
Yeah, but I feel like in a lot of cases, though, because, like, lost media has also become such a hobby for a lot of people, is that the instant, like, even if someone in Japanese puts up something on the internet that was otherwise not available, it's going to, I think, do the rounds pretty quickly now.
Oh, you mean like the Monterey Coco clips that
yeah,
did the rounds
be
very
like
quickly?
The most recent example of that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, it's like, it's a thing too, because it's like, you want to find things that people haven't talked about, but you want them to be good. Like, I don't necessarily want to watch something that no one's heard of and be like, oh, I finally found something no one's heard of, and then watch it and it just be kind of like not good.
Well, the classic, there's actually a really funny example of that, which, do you remember the lost episode of SpongeBob, like the Patchy the Pirate bit?
Right.
Where Patchy's so excited to watch this lost episode of SpongeBob that's never been seen by anyone before, and he puts it on. And it's just like a walk cycle animation.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the fuck is that? That's what most lost media is. It is things like that. Granted, you know, a lot of lost media is things that people at the time did not think anyone would care about. So there was no effort made to preserve it. And then it turns out later down the line, it's like, oh, no, people would actually be interested in something like that.
Yeah, I feel like a lot still, of... You know, lost media now is very much like a product of database.
It's just the sensationalism.
Yeah.
A lost episode of SpongeBob. I gotta see that. And then you watch it and like, it's nothing.
Well, that was just like,
yeah, it's just a walk cycle.
It's just actively clickbait. Cause it's not even an episode. That's like a 3 minute walk cycle or even like a minute. I don't remember how long it was. It was short.
Yeah.
So that's not even an episode. That's just clickbait.
That's the joke. And we'll keep in mind that joke was also made like in the early 2000s, well before like lost media really became like a big thing.
Right. But I mean, like,
it's really pressy.
But really, probably the majority of like lost media is probably just like dubs. And
definitely.
Just different like censored releases and stuff, or like localized releases or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like people don't necessarily care, but like it has become like a product that like the level of care people have has been like almost inflated because of like databasing, right? Like
we've become like cultural hoarders almost, where we want to preserve everything.
I definitely don't have 18 terabytes of anime hoarded on my hard drive.
You have 18 terabytes of what? With that.
What? Anime.
Oh, I thought you said something.
Oh. I think the thing with like dubs and stuff like that, lost dubs, the people who really care about that are like the super, like hyper autistically, like hyper fixation. I love everything. Metabots.
Oh yeah.
Oh no, there's a lost Greek dub. I must have it because it's Metabots. And
yeah, I was at the actual tech panel at Otakon.
Unless I will.
You went to a Metabots panel at Otakon?
No, Discotech.
Oh.
I mean, that is like a lot of the stuff Discotech does. That's like the classic meme. I'm like, oh, they found this like dub that was, you know, the three episodes of Cowboy Bebop in Sweden, but it was dubbed into Spanish for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the majority of lost media is. I don't even necessarily know if I mean like lost media. Like, yeah, to some capacity, I guess. Like, I mean, I would want to watch Monstery Coco, not just because like it is lost and there's like a curiosity thing. It's more of like, it does look like it would be genuinely pretty interesting to watch. But no, because like you want to like try and watch stuff that's like good. And like, I don't know, I guess it's because I'm just at like the point where like I've seen the majority of like the entry level anime that would interest me. And now I'm like seeing the majority of like even kind of the more accessible ones that interest me. And so now it's just like, I'm just trying to find things that interest me that just aren't there.
You
I
know
guess?
What the next level is that I've kind of realized about myself? The next step is just raw anime, like all of the like actual classics, like Star of the Giants. I've been watching Mama Loves the Puyo Puyo Saras, and it's been amazing, but it's not subtitled, so I've just been having to watch it raw, and like it's still
Japanese.
Great. Yeah, I just wish I knew what they were saying. I do kind of know. I've been using like AI Turboscribe to get like really shitty subtitles, but it's enough to like get a basic understanding of what they're saying.
Well, yeah. Even just watching like completely raw anime with no subtitles, it is kind of interesting how much you can just pick up on through context clues.
It's really,
I would actually recommend people like try that out sometimes, like watching an anime with no subtitles and then see how much you are able to pick up on. Just through the presentation, the delivery of the lines, the like body language of the characters, and then go back and watch it and see how correct you were.
I mean, it does generally help that like
probably surprise yourself.
It does generally help that a lot of like social interactions in Japan are very scripted.
Yeah,
even more so.
Well, they're all NPCs,
right? That's exactly what I'm saying. So than like the West, because I feel like here you like go to the store and like the cashier starts ringing you up and like, they might ask you like, how's the weather or whatever. And then like say something like very specific contextually. Whereas like in Japan, that doesn't necessarily happen all that often. Like hardly at all.
So like you go to like a gas station and the cashier at the register asks you, getting any weather, bad weather up your way? And you just respond with, in what way would that be?
There's a storm.
Yeah. Everybody just has like Metal Gear AI.
What is the most you've ever lost on a coin toss?
$20.
Goddamn, really? What the fuck?
No, not really. I don't gamble.
Oh, okay. Oh. Speaking of gambling, this episode is brought to you by Blue Archive.
No, what were you saying, Hayden?
What was I saying? Something about watching raw anime? I don't know. It's cool. Shapes is watching Sally the Witch and Ako-chan. I think he's done with those now. But it's like a pretty unexplored territory for a lot of people. Because people who know Japanese, I don't know too many like AnyTubers who actually speak Japanese and really use it to their advantage to bring over a lot of cool information. Yeah. I mean, you have like Overworked Salaryman, who's been doing really great stuff, but like
Joe's pretty fluent in Japanese, so is Jaden. I think Joe at one point when he was making the Japan Sinks video was just going to straight up be like, do people want me to translate the first chapter of the book?
Yeah. But it's very few people, you know? So you're not going to have people making videos on Star of the Giants, despite it being like incredibly influential and important and popular.
How? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, because like nobody knows what that is in the West. It doesn't have subtitles, so no one will watch it. But if you actually take that step to like learn about it, and you can watch a lot of these shows just for fun too. Again, like Puyo Puyo Sara's a really great show, easy to understand, childcare like parenting show, really cute. I've been enjoying it. Like it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since it just unlocks another like world where that show is like over 50 episodes. And there are a bunch of those shows that like, I don't know, Neighborhood Stories, where it's like a little bit niche, but it's also tied to Ayazawa. So it has its own like cult following. Whereas, you know, a lot of these raw shows, they don't really have like any following. So if you want to actually find some hidden gems in terms of the West, not in terms of the rest of the world, because obviously, like, stuff is dubbed into Italian and French all the time.
The classic example is, like, here in the U.S., Saint Seiya is not particularly popular. You go to Latin America, it's pretty damn popular from what I understand.
Yeah.
Dr. Slump, Saint Seiya. Probably... another, like, probably biggest example, honestly.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't really have English subs, or hasn't for a very long time. But then, again, you go to Mexico and, you know, if you don't know what Dr. Slump is, like, who the fuck are you? Get out.
I think it's one of those things where, like, you can kind of end up thinking that the world...
is a vampire?
The world available to you, the English-speaking world, is all that there is. And unless we elect Donald Trump in November, it never will be. you do get people who are fairly shocked at being like, I had no idea this was so popular. It's like, yeah, because it was never really made widely available. Like Heidi of the Alps is a really good example of that. Heidi is very popular in, like, all across Europe, and just parts of the world in general. A really good example.
All of the world masterpiece theater.
Adventure in Heels. Yeah,
Grandizer. Grandizer, very popular in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia. The Saudi government is actually funding the current Grandizer anime.
Really popular in the Philippines too, I think.
Yeah, not so popular here in the U.S. And you wouldn't think that there's a giant Grandizer statue in Saudi Arabia, but there is.
It is weird. Yeah,
the Grandizer fandom is going crazy over there.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't really consider, like, how much of their perception of, like, anime or media is just painted by other people and, like, accessibility. Yeah. Like, it's very weird that Star of the Giants does not have an English release or any way to consume it in English, yet something like Judo Boy does. Judo Boy is nowhere near as big as Star of the Giants.
No, yeah.
But, like... if you're looking for English-speaking anime from 1969, or that are in 1969, that's your option.
Kill your dogs. Kill your dogs. Kill your dogs.
I want to. I want to. But yeah, people, and this kind of goes for like taste too. Like, people don't really consider how much of their taste is shaped by licensing companies or broadcasts or.
Streaming services,
fan subs, streaming services, stuff like that. Yeah, like, people don't, they make this big deal about like boring taste, right? It's like that kind of exists because of how structures are, where like you kind of are funneled into certain things by broadcast, by what's made available to you through fan subs or whatever.
Yeah.
Like monoculture, like if we're talking back in the day.
It is frustrating when people like really hound on like the whole fucking like boring taste shit.
Take it personally?
No, because it's like it's like fundamentally kind of like limiting the scope of like what is someone's taste, right? Because like you're looking at like a sample size of shows and you're like determining what their taste, like supposedly determining what their taste is, defined based on these like 9 shows or 10 shows or 5 shows or whatever. And it's like, that's not how it works, first off. But I appreciate the sentiment of like, you know, people are like, oh, well, it seems like you would favorite these popular shows because you lack like experience or whatever. But it's like, not necessarily, like you could have just experienced those things in a specific way because of when it was made accessible to you. Like if I had,
they're making like, it sounds like you're in like a bird exhibit in a zoo.
I am. I live in a zoo.
This episode's going great.
But I mean, like, if fucking like Ideon was like made accessible before like Evangelion in the West, like I feel like that would be more seen as like, I don't know if it necessarily would have more people favoriting it, but it definitely would have a higher chance to, and like that would have a higher chance of like shaping people's how they've kind of approached the medium. Because like when you watch something, really will define, like, because like if you watch something like a Naruto or whatever, like when you first get into anime, in some capacity that's going to define how you then engage with the medium, like whether it's like implicit or like subconscious or whatever, like your experience with the medium is going to define how you kind of engage with it. And so like, it's interesting that people don't really talk about that when they like accessibility and all that, when they talk about, people's tastes and stuff.
I mean, I feel like the trappings of like accusing people of having boring tastes is you're just accusing people of not having the same taste as you. So it's either boring or bad.
Yeah, well, the classic example is like the Trash Taste like 3x3 episode where they kind of like clown on Connor because he doesn't have like an ironic favorite on his 3x3.
Yeah, it's just,
and it's like, just fuck you. Oremo seems like a pretty good show apart from the ending.
Oh, it's just a generally like, it feels like misguided perception of like what taste is, like where you're defining it where it's like, oh, if you don't. Because like the assumption is like, oh, well, if you get deeper into anime and you have like deeper insights, you will then have to, it will then like show on your favorites. And it's like, maybe, but maybe not in a way that you're specifically thinking it would. Like just because somebody is like really into, again, like Magical Girls, like doesn't mean that their top 10 is going to be Magical Girls shows and only Magical Girls shows. Like sometimes it might just show up as like having Utena and Princess Tutu at your top 10 and make a higher concentration than you would otherwise. Like it's just like a weird constrained way of like viewing favorites. I was tying that into gatekeeping and like obscure and accessibility. I feel like I was not super successful. I don't know if it's my fault. I think it's the fact I had to stop talking like 5 times during this. But yeah, it's all tied together. They're all connected. Your taste, accessibility, gatekeeping.
It's all connected like a giant human centipede.
Giant human centipede.
And that's the moral of the story.